The Nonprofits is made possible by volunteers and the generous support of listeners like you. If the promotion of positive atheist culture and separation of church and state are values you hold, please consider contributing by becoming an ACA member or visiting our product page at evolvefish.com under the Partner tab. Thank you. And we are the Nonprofits. I'm Dennis Lube, along with Jeff D. and Russell Glasser. We're coming to you live, yes, live, to you personally, Frank, on the 4th of July, 2017. We didn't want to barge in on you at home, so we stayed at the Austin Freethought Library in Austin, Texas, and figured we'd talk to you through a podcast. Yeah, it's a little weird that we're using a studio sponsored by the Atheist Community of Austin, a nonprofit educational organization for the promotion of positive atheism and the separation of church and state, but we just figured whatever works, right? In case you want to check them out, you can reach their voicemail at 512-220-6561 or their website at www.atheist-community.org. They're totally legit. Don't worry, if you're too busy to listen to us right this minute, we'll be doing this every first and third Wednesday of each month from 7:30 to 9 Central Time. You can even check into the chat room that we made just for you by following the directions at www.nonprofitsradio.com. There's even a Facebook group at www.facebook.com/the-non-profits, but that's got other people in it. Ugh. So, if you're listening, you want to sit back and enjoy the show.
Who's Frank? Hey.
You don't know Frank?
Is it TV's Frank? Who are we talking about?
There's a Frank on How to Get Away with Murder. That's a pretty good character.
Yeah. Your intros are getting a little more obscured.
Yeah, this is Frank, our listener, you know.
Our listener.
Yeah. No, our one listener.
Okay. Yeah.
Got it.
Okay. How you doing?
You know,
there, Frank.
Frank.
So, it's 2017.
Yep, it's no longer 2016.
Which means the 21st century is still not yet legal to drink.
Or participate in adult
various things.
I'm not going
there. Not till next year.
It also means that people who were saying
it's teasing us,
2016 was terrible, which
it was,
can now get used to the fact that we've got a whole new terrible year.
Yes. Yeah, at least
more will die.
2016 didn't start with like terribleness front loaded.
Yeah, I looked it up and Alan Rickman was the first big guy to die in January. But
and that's a big one.
You know, I do want to remind people that like Leonard Nimoy died in 2015.
Right.
And, you know, before that, Robin Williams and some other people.
I dare say a vast number of people die every year.
Yes.
But
so let's not be superstitious about numbers.
It just became a thing to hate on 2016.
Right.
Near the end.
Each time somebody we knew almost knew.
But it was that on top of other things going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. So I guess it's kind of understandable, but let's stop now, shall we?
Sure.
It's a whole new year.
Well, I won't be ragging on 2016 anymore.
Okay.
Can't we just blame things on 2016?
That's right. Thanks, 2016.
Right. So
it's the scapegoat's year.
New year, same old show.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I got listener mail. I'm gonna go first.
You go ahead.
I generally don't go first.
You got something from Frank? Let's see.
No, but I got something about the question of can't we all just get along?
Oh, must be one of Frank's friends. Okay. All right.
Zach so writes, wrote,
quoting Rodney King. That's an old one.
Zach writes, I'm a big fan, a Torontonian, and a longtime listener. I was on Facebook the other day, and I found a post from this person that I thought was terrible. I couldn't find any other information on them, so I thought I would pass it along to you in hopes of some sort of catharsis from hearing you rant about it. I personally think that if it's true, she should be fired. That must get curious what this is going to be about. Please think of this person as the well-behaved Mormon woman's Canadian sister. Think of her that way or try to do the voice. Okay, I mean,
careful what you wish for.
This is the well-behaved Mormon woman, and this is the more well-behaved Mormon woman's Canadian sister, So like two of my little first graders last year, Christian boys, came to me asking if they could pray together on the class's carpet before eating their lunch. So like I told them it was fine as long as they weren't being silly, eh? Those boys prayed together every single day, and before long, other students joined them, too, in their daily prayers. These children were from Muslim, Hindu, Jewish, Sikh, and even atheist families. What I found amazing was that not one of the children ever, like, told another one how to pray. So, like, each prayed in their own way together on the carpet, even if it was just to find grateful intentions for those of atheist backgrounds. I don't understand what that sentence means.
No, I can't follow that one.
I'm reading the letter, my letter, because I wrote this. These kids would speak openly about their beliefs and religions, eh? We would have class discussions about our culture's beliefs, traditions, and how we spoke about how to communicate with and respect others who did not believe the same things as us. The kids were genuinely excited and curious to learn about each other. What I want to say is that now more than ever in these bizarre times, my fellow teachers, we need to stick together to make sure love and respect is what is spread within our schools. We have time and time again to see how children were not born to hate with hate in their hearts, as hatred is something they were taught. We also know ourselves the power of education and of positive role models. Please protect the innocent and the next generation. And then there's a crap load of hashtags.
Okay.
Zach goes on. To me, this seems like she created a monster. She obviously works in a public setting and in no way should be orchestrating group talks that involve religion to children that are so young. Okay. Well, you asked for it, Zach. I am going to rant on this. I really almost see nothing wrong with this. The kids came to her and said they wanted to do it, and one thing a teacher can't do is deny kids the right to practice their religious beliefs if they are doing it in a unobtrusive way and not causing a problem. So on that level, I don't have a problem with this. She did not start it. So then the bit about the kids of different religions getting along, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
So what is it that we're all mad about with this story? That it's annoying that some of the children are atheists from atheist families. Excuse me. Don't want to put labels on the children. So it's annoying that some of them were from atheist families, but it has never been possible to isolate your children at a school from children religion. Of different beliefs.
Right.
And according to this lady, nobody was pushing anything on anybody else. They were communicating.
Well,
so what is it we're supposed to be mad about?
Is this during class?
Before eating their lunch.
Before eating their lunch.
So it sounds like at the start of lunch period.
You could make the point that kids getting together to do that pressures other kids to join them.
You could make that argument. That is something that comes up when there's like overt religious groups in high schools.
Mm-hmm. You feel like the out group if you don't join in.
Yeah, but then if this had been an event that was organized by the teacher, teacher would be at fault for whatever pressuring went on. If it's the kids doing it themselves,
then they're pressuring.
And the teacher is merely allowing them, then that's not the teacher being creating a monster. That is the kids.
It's the
obvious thing they're going to do.
It's the religious belief of the children creating the monster.
Yeah, and I'm right with everyone in not liking religion, but at the same time, people, even children, have the right to express whatever religious views have been hammered into their heads.
Yeah.
Now, so I'm still failing to see what the issue is here.
What I would hope is that since more and more kids are being raised in non-religious families, a critical mass could embolden some of them to respond.
And at the point when the religious practice causes a problem, then I think the school has the responsibility to step in and break it up.
Right. If this became a daily prayer and there was something visible about kids pressuring each other, then gets toward the problem.
Explicitly, according to this letter, that's not going on.
Yeah.
And I should point out this lady does not appear to have a particular religious agenda of her own. There was a bunch of hashtag things I didn't want to read at the end of her post, but none of them is like Jesus.
Overtly Jesus.
None of them are specific to any particular religion.
It may just be a happy story. That would be great.
Yeah, I mean the
cats and dogs living together,
So I don't know, man. And also, this guy's from Toronto. I don't know whether the woman whose letter he was reading is Canadian.
Yeah.
And that I don't know what the laws are on separation of church and state and religion in public schools in Canada.
Yeah.
So I can't we can't comment on
now,
that.
What was
maybe this is way over some kind of line there, but here this is like as far as I'd ever want it to go, and as far as I understand it, it's legally allowed to go here in the U.S.
What was the sentence we found difficult to parse? About atheists.
Each prayed in their own way together on the carpet, even if it was just to find grateful intentions for those of atheist backgrounds. I think she's trying to describe what the atheist kids were doing, which –
I have no idea what that means.
Which ought to be nothing, but
right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
If they praying to good intentions, I don't know. I don't know what she thinks.
Weird. Yeah.
So there's clearly some confusion about atheist kids here.
Yeah.
And I would have liked. I mean, there are some things I don't like about this,
here.
But not nearly enough to get me all pissed off and
right.
And yelling, right? That I would like for the teacher to have some show some grasp at all of what.
Yes, if all religions can live together in peace,
practice
and,
is.
Yeah, if all religions can live together in peace and harmony, that's something we should be looking into. Yeah.
Yeah.
How do we get that to work? I don't want
all religions living together in peace and harmony. I want all religions
to go away. Yeah, but it would be nice if they don't kill everybody before then.
Not by enforcing.
Peace and harmony would be nice.
Sure. Sure. In the meanwhile, that's fine. Anybody disagree with me here?
Not too much.
No, not too much. No.
Okay. Sorry, Zach, you're not going to get your catharsis here. Go be pissed off on your own about things which, as far as we can tell, are perfectly legal and, if slightly annoying, big deal.
Hmm.
Okay.
Okay. Well,
oh, good grief. You brought up that Russell is paging through screens on his laptop. And I
I've got it right
here. Saw the freaking Pope.
I'm ready. Oh, yeah, the Pope's there. I don't have to use him.
Okay.
The Pope objects to fake news, which the person tweeted at me found ironic.
How ironic, yes.
But
the
maybe,
good news.
Maybe we'll get to it. Maybe not. But we do have some good news stories back to back, not from the United States. In Britain, belief in God plunges after a torrid year.
Good.
Torrid.
Sure.
Torrid, yeah.
Did they have a torrid year in Britain?
Apparently
my familiarity with that word
was hot and heavy with each
sexy
other.
Year.
A torrid love affair, right? That's where I've heard that word. Yeah. What does that mean?
The first sentence here uses the word tumultuous.
Tumultuous.
Which I think is
a year full of drama, I think, is what they're doing.
Okay.
Forget believing in Santa. The tumultuous events of 2016 appear to have left Britons unable to believe in God.
Britons?
Yes. This is from theweek.co.uk. A YouGov poll for the Times has shown a 4-point decline in the percentage of people who believe in a higher power from 32% in February last year to 28% now.
Quite low. That's a 4% plunge.
Yes, unless you think of it as a drop from the original base level, in which case it's like a 15% drop. Something like that.
Over several years, right?
No, I mean from 32 to 28 is...
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see what you mean. 15-ish. I see what you mean.
Don't 12-ish. Try to distract
me with mathematics.
Sources, ways.
The drop suggests a far sharper decrease than in previous years, the Times says. Britain's belief in God has long been in decline, but at a rate of about 1% per year, the newspaper reports, citing a different question used by the British Attitudes Survey in 1991, which found half the population thought there was a God. 1991. 16 years ago. No, excuse me, 26.
Yeah.
Yow.
By 2008, the number of believers had fallen to 35%. Anyway, the proportion of atheists, people who say they do not actively believe in any kind of God, has risen from 33% to 38%.
Uh-huh.
So,
hey.
Yeah.
I find your lack of faith encouraging.
And we have
Darth Vader.
A nearly identical story from the Netherlands from December 23rd in nltimes.nl. Atheism rises in Netherlands. Half of Dutch people do not believe in deities.
Uh-huh.
Woo. For the first time in history, there are an equal number of religious and non-religious people in the Netherlands, according to a report by Statistics Netherlands. Last year, 50% of the 18-year-olds and older population were atheists, and 50% followed some form of religion, NOS reports. The largest group of believers are Roman Catholics with 24% of the population, Protestants are 15%, and then there's 5% Muslims and 6% other stuff like Buddhism, Judaism, and Hinduism.
Uh-huh.
So worldwide falling. Not sure what the situation is in the U.S. because I don't have a story this week.
Last report I heard, religiosity continues to decline.
Yes. So thanks again at Cootie59.
We're gonna, one of these years, we're gonna have to like completely retool this show when religion is not really the issue. We'll become like a skeptical show, right? Scientific skepticism, or maybe just like cheerleading for cool weird cool new science stories.
Once we pass
to get excited,
51%,
yeah.
All of a sudden, we're the majority.
Yes. And then we can oppress people.
That's right. We'll have all the privilege. That's right.
Yeah.
No, actually, statistically speaking, it appears that you can repress everyone with about 23% of the population. Based on the latest.
Although, seriously, just the fact that fewer people are believing in God isn't enough to make me identify with them all, considering
considering what some of them are like.
Right.
Yeah.
And we'll get to that. There, I have a letter. In fact, we'll do that as my next letter.
Yeah.
Okay.
But are you done with your news story?
I'm pretty much done with that.
So that's Netherlands and Britain, huh?
Religious persecution is one of many axes on which people fight each other. So if that diminishes, then that's a good thing, even if it doesn't solve everything.
You may recall that last episode we had a discussion. Dennis won't recall this because he wasn't here. Did you listen to the – have a chance to listen to the
Alas,
show?
Alas, nay.
We had a discussion of the word should and sure. what it means to tell people what they should do and whether it's possible to tell people what they should do and what the conditions are. Got a couple of responses to that. This is not the one I was going to read first, but this is the one that fits right now. H.J. Hornbeck writes, in a recent episode, Jeff Russell and Manda argued over what atheists should do, if anything at all, and never reached a consensus. I think I have an example which will help you get there. Democritus and the other atomists proposed that the universe was made of atoms. Slight problem. They didn't have any solid evidence for this. Should we credit them with being right?
Ooh, interesting.
This question is all about justified belief. Most of us wouldn't credit you with believing in X if you didn't have solid evidence to back up that belief. Okay, here's where my first comment.
Okay.
It seems like you just moved the goalposts.
Uh-huh.
The question was, should we credit Democritus and the atomists with being right? And the second is, should we credit someone with believing a thing? Well, believing a thing is easy. Anybody can believe anything. So just the way this was phrased is wrong. Democritus and the atomists totally believed that the universe was made of atoms.
Yeah.
Okay, so the relevant question is, were they correct? Well, people can be correct by accident, even sometimes. So, what is the real? Is that
I
could guess
says,
how many gumballs are in a jar, right? And I would be correct by accident.
Yeah, when he says, should we credit them for being right? I think there's more to it than just they happen to be right.
It's credit. More like, do we
– like did they discover
yes.
atoms? No, they guessed.
They did not discover atoms. They hypothesized atoms.
Right.
Which is fine.
Sure.
Right.
And it turned out to be correct.
I hypothesized there were 2,037 gumballs in the jar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's fine, right? Did I believe there were that many in the jar? I didn't.
I guessed.
I could, and if I did, I'd be a moron. As far as I know, Democritus and the atomists believed that they were right.
Uh-huh.
So I think what H.J. is getting at here is, should they have believed they were right?
No, that's not reasonable? What he's saying. He's saying, should we give them any credit for founding some kind of modern scientific thought?
Well, what do you think, Russell?
No.
Okay.
Well, but I mean, I think he's just using that as a springboard because he wanted to talk about whether it's okay to should things. And I think –
okay. Yeah.
Or whether it's reasonable to should we say should is maybe the question.
Okay.
And I said last week that we should say should, and you said that we should not. Or
I think, in fact, my position is shoulds arise from what your goals are.
Right.
A should is a thing you invoke when you're plotting a path toward some specified goal. Then you can say, You know, if you want to do X, then you should do Y.
Right.
If you just say should absent any particular goal, then you're pontificating as far as I'm concerned. And I think there are a great many perfectly reasonable goals we should insist on people having, right?
Yeah.
Should insist on people having because we want to live in a world full of people like that.
Right.
So, okay, but let's see where HJ is going with this because we still don't know what this has to do with that.
Does the phrase justified true belief have anything to do with what's been said in that letter
In fact, he's about to use that phrase himself.
All right.
And here's how he gets there. The same problem occurs with atheism, surprisingly enough. While it's tempting to pull the atheism as lack of belief card here, that ignores the fact that we live in a society where most people believe. No, it doesn't.
No. Yeah, it has nothing to do with that.
What difference does it make what other people believe? If I don't, then I don't.
He's suggesting there's a baseline.
I think everything can be measured from that. He is about to build his case.
I think you guys are being more sarcastic than he is warranted.
I have actually read the letter. I think his suspicions have been arisen in exactly the right way.
Okay. I'm just you gonna, can't, I know HJ and
you I, you yes and I you want us to be think, nice to him for that on that
No,
basis?
I mean, I find him to be a sharp and reasonable chap.
Let's find out.
When it comes to this stuff.
Oh, that's fine.
You can't claim to be ignorant of religion because it keeps getting shoved in your face by the other people in media you consume. So what?
Right. Okay.
That the claim that atheism is lack of belief does not have anything to do with claiming to be ignorant of religion. That's a total non sequitur. I cannot believe in a God and be completely informed about what religion is and what the beliefs of the people around me are.
I've seen the same Star Wars movies, and I know that Princess Leia doesn't exist.
So, okay. Puzzled by that.
I'm going to wait
by
this
that
out.
Assertion. You had to have argued against its claims if you're claiming to be an atheist. No, actually, you don't. You can be an atheist and never argue.
Right.
You can be an atheist and live on an island by yourself and never have encountered religion. Or you can live in a society full of believers and never have argued with them. Or you can be an atheist without having ever argued against its claims if by against its claims you mean saying the claim – arguing that the claims are false as opposed to rejecting the claims because they're unproved. Saying right. – if a guy says, I believe in God, you ask him, how come? He says, 'cause of this old book, and you say, I – don't find that compelling, you have rejected his belief without arguing against his claim. You're just saying that's insufficient.
I don't follow you there. Yeah. I can't follow you into your God belief due to this book.
HJ appears to be trying to pile a whole bunch of shoulds on atheists that I think are all false. Do you want to step in now?
Yes, I do want to step in.
Okay.
5 minutes ago, we said that when the population crosses the 50% mark where they don't believe in God, we're going to have to change the subject.
Well, I said the show, actually. I think the show would probably be more effective.
Be some sort of change.
Talking about something else. Says,
but I mean, you are focusing on HJ's single-mindedly focusing on HJ talking about what we should do as if he was only focused on atheists. And the question that comes up for me a lot is, why do we do this stuff? Like, why do we have a show? Why do we have a group? Why do we do social events around atheism? And it's not to defend this specific literal-minded belief that we don't believe in God.
Right.
I think the reason that we found it necessary to get together and do active positive stuff is because, like HJ says, it's a response to a very religious society.
And part of
the reason why people identify as atheists is not to make this very simple statement of fact, but to sort of deal with a reaction to a social situation.
Okay, and that's fine. Those people who wish to do that are fine doing that.
But that's
those
us.
People who do not wish to do that. They do not have to do that. And for us to say they should do as we do, false.
But why do you keep saying they about people who wish to do that when obviously we are the people who wish to do that? We specifically, right here in this room, and most people listening to the show.
The should question came up with regard to what atheists should do. And HJ's letter is about what atheists should do because they are atheists. And I think that is complete bullshit. I think those atheists who wish to be activists, that is a fine thing, right? And it might be fair to say those atheists who wish to be activists should be activists, right?
Yes.
Because that is their goal. That is the path to get to the goal. So you can say should. Those atheists who do not wish to be activists do not have to be activists. They are not wrong to not be activists. And therefore, to say they should be is false.
So suppose that HJ had qualified his letter and just specified those atheists who with us want to be active for atheism should do such and such, then you'd have no problem with
it. Then I might not have a problem with it, but also it would be completely irrelevant to the discussion we were having.
It's not irrelevant to the discussion we're
sure
having.
Sure it is. It would be if he's because the discussion was we're going back to the last episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
What we can say to other people about what they should do. Well, that depends what kind of people they are, and it depends on what goals they have.
Okay.
There are some incredibly basic goals that if someone doesn't have them, you can rightly start being concerned about them as a person.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
But wanting your atheism to be activist is not one of those things. It is just not fair to ever assume that some atheist must act in a certain way, should act in a certain way, just because they're an atheist. Other than, you know, things that would violate the very definition of atheism, which is what, once again? Lack of belief in a God.
Unconvinced.
I don't find your point that interesting, to be honest.
Fantastic. Well, that's often true of people who are maybe on the wrong side of an argument.
Well, then it's a good thing that I'm not one of those.
Let's go back to HJ. I mean, you were attempting to cut him slack. Okay.
I'm not just attempting to cut him slack. I'm pursuing what I think is his real point.
Okay.
Okay. I mean, he very clearly refers to a problem that occurs with atheism, not with atheists who wish to be activist.
All right.
With atheism.
Yep.
So he did not – I mean, it's things like that where you wanted to read into what he was saying a particular interpretation that would make what he was saying correct, and that might be fair. Then all we're doing is we're criticizing his – failure to make
– yeah, but
to
this is why I brought up the fact
reasonably.
That I know HJ.
Okay.
It's like it's not a magic trick to figure out what's on his mind. I've had other conversations with him before.
Maybe he should write us another letter. And I dare say he very well may after hearing the treatment that he got on this one. And I don't know him. Let's let him continue.
Yeah.
If you're claiming to an you had to have argued against its claims if you're claiming to be an atheist. That's just not true.
No, that's not true.
In order to make that a valid claim, you had to pull in external evidence, Okay, in order to make that a valid claim, the claim that I don't even know what claim he's talking about.
I need no evidence to say I don't believe you.
Okay.
Right.
At the beginning of the letter, he was talking about whether Democritus was justified in his belief in Adams.
And he was not.
Point was that if he was not, then he was making a correct claim but not a valid claim.
Okay, that's good.
And then H.J. is saying, by the same token,
in order to make atheism a valid claim,
right.
Atheism is not a claim at all. It is a rejection of a claim.
Yeah, it is the statement, I don't believe you.
So why on earth is he telling us what we need to do to make that a valid claim? The time that it becomes an erroneous position is when the existence of the God has been established. Until then, not believing it is perfectly reasonable.
Is he taking this into the realm of atheists have to say that
I don't know.
God does not exist?
I don't know.
Well, that's what it seems like here.
But I don't want to go too far parsing.
So in the movie God's Not Dead, Kevin Sorbo turns out that he's only an atheist because he's pissed off that his mom got cancer.
Right. Uh-huh. And there are such people.
There are such people.
Okay.
But, I mean, you know, this is a typical straw man among Christians. Atheists actually secretly believe in God, but
we hate it.
Okay. Okay. And
you take that to certain extremes, and you can say, you know, quite literally, Kevin Sorbo's character is an atheist, but not for sensible reasons.
There is totally such a thing as being an atheist for reasons that are not sensible.
Right.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Rejecting somebody else's argument after having looked at all of their claim and evaluated the strength of their evidence is not one of those. Is not one of those things.
But I mean, given that you can come to atheism for bad reasons, it does make sense to talk about
H.J. seems to be getting at is a claim that unless you can make a positive argument for the God's non-existence, your atheism is not justified. That is what he appears to be saying. Maybe I'm overinterpreting this.
Here's my question.
And in any case, I don't know how the hell that has to do with should. Because,
would you be comfortable with saying that all people should come to beliefs for sound reasons, whatever their beliefs happen to be, that they should try to be skeptical of things?
Sure, I'll jump right into the jaws of whatever trap you've set here. Yes.
Yes. Sure.
Yes.
That's one of those things. If you recall earlier, I said there are some incredibly basic things that. It's reasonable to be concerned about a person as a human being if they don't have those kinds of goals.
Right.
So I will tentatively stick my toe in and say, even though I sense that impending trap, I will stick my toe in and say,
flattered.
I think it might be reasonable to say people should believe things for good reasons. They should also decline to believe things for good reasons.
I agree.
But what constitutes a good reason for declining to believe in a thing and what constitutes believing in a good reason for believing in a thing are actually different.
All right. Fair enough.
Okay.
And I'm flattered that you think that my argument is this sophisticated. I'm kind of flying by the seat of my pants here, but what I'm thinking is that first of all, the atheists I know happen to be human beings, and because I believe that human beings should have sound reasons for what they think, I feel comfortable saying that atheists should have sound reasons for arriving at atheism.
Yeah, and the only reason that it's necessary is the theists haven't proved their case.
Sure. I mean
– that's it. Right. That's, which is nowhere near the level of the amount of information necessary to justify a positive belief in almost anything.
Right. Okay. But I mean they shouldn't –
I'm going to keep going with
they it. They shouldn't be atheists because they're like to quote that famous apologist line you know, God interferes with our sexual mores.
Okay,
maybe they should.
You just did should.
In the broad, every human should sense.
Let's get to the end of this guy's.
Yeah.
I'm just going to shut
up. We're make still, everything
he's
clear.
Still talking about. He's continuing to go leap to pile all these assertions onto. What must have happened in order that you can even be an atheist? You had to reference humanism or at least the human condition. You had to include enough additional facts about the world to also spark a discussion about ethics and morality. No.
Absolutely not.
Okay.
That's like the biggest straw. This is a straw man who constructed on like a giant scaffolding with like incredibly detailed schematics of how all the pieces of straw go together.
Right.
No.
Okay. I'm going to meet you halfway here and say that to the extent that he's saying that you have to do that to be an atheist, you're right. You don't have to do that.
But now I think he's summing up here.
Okay.
By asserting beliefs must be justified, you wind up dragging enough secondary assertions into atheism to kickstart morality and should questions. No.
Absolutely
not. If the theist has not proved that the God exists,
you're done.
You don't need to get within 100 million miles of any of those questions.
Yeah, you don't need it.
I would like people to get to grapple with those questions.
Sure, but just because we'd like a thing doesn't mean other people should conform to your likes on that issue. He is continuing to sum up. If you drop that part and simply assert that atheism is a lack of belief or active disbelief without caring how that belief was arrived at, wait!
It's not a belief!
We do care how that belief was arrived at. That is why we have looked at the theist. Now, the theist may bring in all those other things, but you know what doesn't have anything to do with whether a thing exists?
Wait a minute.
Morality.
Well, now you're saying we, but I think you are now not talking about all atheists, because it's certainly true that some atheists didn't look at all that evidence. They just – I mean we've already agreed that some atheists are atheists for dumb reasons.
Humanism and the human condition. I'm just going
that
to go back to
necessary.
one right. item out of his laundry list of straw men that are things that you have to have done, he says, or else you don't have justified atheism. Humanism and the human condition have nothing to do with whether there's a cosmic space entity that created the universe.
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing to do with it.
The only reason anything on that list might have anything to do with that is if he's stating that atheists have to say God does not exist.
I would start to agree with that. I would start to agree with many of these things if we are talking about what they call hard atheism.
Yeah.
Right?
But the most inclusive definition of atheism is lack of belief in a God.
Except that's
but
a,
I'm
that
not
is
a hard
that,
atheist.
That is a silly definition of hard atheism when the claims made by – just take in particular atheism with regard to the Christian God, right? Mm-hmm. There's so much stuff in the very definition of the Christian God which is simply
contradictory
and impossible.
Right.
That you can reject that again without having to go into any of this other stuff on his list.
Yeah.
Right.
And I guess what he's trying to get at is, you know, constructing this definition of an atheist that leads to it being fair to say what an atheist should or shouldn't do, or that the definition itself that he's trying to erect,
right,
is saying you're not an atheist unless you meet these criteria.
Well, he's saying you're not a valid atheist.
Yeah.
Unless
I'm sorry, HJ.
No,
that's bullshit. This was one letter full of bullshit.
I do not think it was full of bullshit.
Which part?
Some parts of it were bullshit, depending on how you interpret it.
And also, I also want to – it seems if – you know, I'm left at the end – wondering what on earth. Okay, so he's HJ, did you think I was saying we can't say should because we don't have morality or something, or because we don't have an atheist version of morality? Should isn't about morality. Should is about tactics, seems to me. Morality tells you what's good behavior and what's bad behavior. And then if you want to be moral, then you can say, well, you should do that because that's how you arrive at the thing that is good morality.
Right.
But it's not morality tells you what you should do. If you can be completely aware of morality and choose not to be moral.
I am pretty sure that at least some definitions of should invoke morality and ethics.
I'm going to read another letter right now.
Freedictionary.com.
Uh-huh.
Number two definition of should is moral rightness.
Okay. Now,
so,
I'm going to read the other letter, which I meant to read first.
All right.
Now I have to bring it in as like, you know, ass saving for me instead of as, you know, claiming the high ground in the first place. Mindy says, I was listening to your December 21st podcast and the discussion on the use of should. Jeff was definitely on to something there. This particular term is problematic in many ways, as the person using it is invoking a sense of authority, whether that authority is warranted or not. I am a writing instructor, and I advise students to avoid using should in any argument essay because it weakens their ability to reason. I wrote a blog post about it called The Crutch of Should.
Okay.
The use of should also implies that the person on the receiving end of it, the one who should do or not do something, is somehow unable to reason as well.
Mm.
And that's kind
– well, some targets are incapable of reasoning, but yeah.
That's not how I put it, but I guess what she's getting at that I agree with is that there's two different ways to look at, say, a proper behavior. One is there's a set of rules, and if you don't follow those rules, you are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is – the universe is complicated and you're making complicated choices all the time and balancing this against that and trying to get to a result that is best. And your view of what's best could include the what's best for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Or you could have a short-sighted and therefore less preferable view on morality, that it's just whatever's best for you, right?
Right.
Of the two, the set of rules which you must follow is something you can't ever do anything with. You are living under the regime that imposes those rules. Boom. Then none of the rules is ever you may come back and change these rules. These absolute hard and fast rules. Kind of morality.
Don't rules often come to existence for sound reasons?
There are two different kinds of rules. Okay. There's the rules which you are compelled to obey by some authority, right? That's religious morality. Yeah. Or there are the rules which have emerged from this process of trying to get things right.
All right. Should I stop at a red light in my car?
Do you want to reduce your chance of getting in an accident? Reduce your chance of harming others? Do you want to avoid getting a ticket? Those are the questions, and your answers to those questions will determine whether you should, in scare quotes, at the red light. I'm going to finish my point. I think a mistake a lot of people make is that the laws that we have on the books are equivalent to religious morality, that they are commands you're not allowed to violate.
Yeah, but we weren't just talking about religious morality. You were saying rules in general just then.
And I was talking about two different kinds of rules.
Okay.
And the one kind is the divine command kind of rule. And the other is stuff like laws. And laws are not – I hate the phrase rules are made to be broken, right? Mm. Or laws are made to be broken, if I don't apply that.
Yeah.
However, they are breakable.
Sure.
Right? If you violate – you can violate a law without necessarily being in the wrong. You can be wrong by those rules, but not morally wrong necessarily in an ultimate sense. And that's what I went there because that's the part of what Mindy was getting at in her letter that I agree with, right? Mm-hmm. That should skips over all the questions of, you know, what's for the best for everyone or even just for you and simply imposes a rule on you.
It seems that there's a difference between obeying laws simply out of obedience and obeying laws simply because you know why they're good for you.
I agree that is a thing. That's not the thing I was talking about.
That's not the thing we're talking about, but I just want to clarify that.
It's not possible to know why a set of divine commands would be good for you. Because it's not about you why. It's about you doing as you're told.
Yeah.
And again, the what Mindy appears to be getting at is that should jumps straight there without going through those steps. Yeah. Right? Jump straight to, well, this is what you are to do. And if you do not do as this says, then you are in error.
Should as a decree. Right.
Right. Should as advice? I have not a lot of problem with should as advice, but is that how it would help if I had recently listened to our last episode so I could remember precisely what the discussion was.
I mean,
about.
It's always complicated when you're dealing with a vague word that has multiple possible meanings. So,
but anyway,
I mean, I'm just saying you should not necessarily attribute the silliest possible meaning to somebody who's trying to get a point across.
Sure, sure.
Are we back to HJ? I was driven to my interpretation of HJ's letter by the relentless drumbeat of unjustified assertions.
And the more we read, the more it became clear.
So maybe he assumed we had some core agreement and that these wouldn't be challenged or something. I don't know. HJ, you're welcome to write us back. I really found nothing in your letter that was useful at all. Sorry, man.
Strong words.
Happens sometimes.
How about some more news?
All right. Yeah. We have talked recently about fake news and skepticism.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Mark Zuckerberg.
You know,
I don't know if I care about that.
Only the Pope would go on a Twitter rampage. That would be awesome.
I'm the best Pope. My critics are just losers and haters. Well, this is not only about atheism, but it is on the theme of fake news as submitted by at Mega Library Girl on Twitter. Fake news story prompts Pakistan to issue nuclear warning to Israel.
Yikes.
A fake news story has touched off a Twitter confrontation between nuclear powers Pakistan and Israel, the latest disturbing incident of fabricated stories having a serious impact in the real world. The exchange of tense public words between two countries with a difficult relationship and no diplomatic ties comes the same month that a fake news story about a child abuse ring prompted a gunman to fire shots inside a pizza restaurant in Washington, which I think we touched on in the last show. The spat appeared to have been prompted by the publication of a fake story headlined, "Israeli Defense Minister, if Pakistan send ground troops to Syria on any pretext, we will destroy this country with a nuclear attack." The story appeared on December 20th on the site AWD News, which has been identified by fact-checking organizations as a fake news site. Snopes, one of five organizations chosen by Facebook to vet questionable stories, said AWD News doesn't have more than a nodding acquaintance with facts, instead playing on nationalistic fantasy and conspiracy theory to create alarming stories. Skepticism is important.
Yes, it is.
Who's in the wrong there? Sheesh. You know, one of the things I've really noticed with the upsurge in fake news is this like libertarian attitude toward knowledge.
Right. Caveat emptor.
If you heard a thing that wasn't true and you believed it, then it's your fault. Because, you know, if you didn't want to believe false things, then you should have not – you should have vetted it. And there is certainly a level on which I agree with that.
On which it applies to this story.
But it ends there for many people with that attitude. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, this was not about – okay, so who got tricked? It was Pakistan.
Yes,
Pakistan got tricked into thinking this. Well, I mean, you could say it's just Pakistan's fault. There's like nuclear weapon threats flying around here, folks. Right? It's not just about.
Serious.
It is not just about the person who got tricked. It is about all the consequences stemming from the belief in this lie.
Right. Everyone will pay.
So, there totally is a responsibility for what happens after you tell a lie that is borne by the liar.
Right. There are consequences. And it's certainly true that, like, you know, this guy here who tweeted in response to this story, who is, I believe, some Pakistani official, Khawaja M. Asif, saying, "Israeli defense minister threatens nuclear retaliation, presuming Pakistan role in Syria against Daesh. Israel forgets Pakistan is a nuclear state too." That guy's gullibility is a problem that is escalating the situation. But it is also like nurtured by an atmosphere where people are like where the line between fake news and real news and the sources where you get them is being deliberately blurred in a lot of places.
Right.
You know, by the people who publish it and by all the people who repost it all the time without checking their sources.
Can somebody – you know the whole thing about, yeah, there's free speech, but what about shouting fire in a crowded theater?
Right.
Right. I don't know the context of that.
I believe that was a Supreme Court case where here, Wikipedia has a whole article.
Okay.
The phrase is a paraphrasing of Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr.'s opinion in the United States Supreme Court case Schenck versus the United States in 1919, which held that the defendant's speech in opposing the draft during World War I was not protected free speech under the First Amendment of the United States Constitution.
Okay. Yuck.
The paraphrasing generally does not include but does imply the word falsely. Presumably it's okay to shout fire in a crowded theater if there is a fire, so I think that's a little pedantic.
Now, if if the thing that was said against the draft was false and like perniciously false in a way that caused trouble, then I guess it could be the same thing. It's unfortunate that the example has to be that, because it's it leads to a whole separate conversation. But you know, that is what we have to start embracing, I think, as a society, is that people who tell irresponsible falsehoods need to be held accountable.
Yeah.
Right.
That free speech doesn't cover it.
Following the link for that, the defendants were distributing flyers in 1919 to draft-age men urging resistance to induction and could be convicted of an attempt to obstruct the draft, which is a criminal offense, according to the laws at the time.
Yeah.
It is kind of rough.
So there were laws on the books saying you couldn't interfere, and they were interfering, and they said, well, it doesn't matter because it's free speech.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I get why that was ruled on that way. Mm-hmm. It should not – that does not appear to me to be a well-phrased law in the first place. Okay. So –
where are we now? Right.
More, I guess we're at more mail.
Are we?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not sure. Because we started late, I'm not sure how far.
9:30. Well,
this is the amount of show we have left.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
All right.
At some point, Russell, you might have a thing.
I'll go next, yeah.
You want to go right after my next letter?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Maybe pick a short one? I don't know.
Okay, here's a real short one. Phil writes, please, please, can Russell do a loud Scottish Bill O'Reilly? I don't think he means like right now make up something. I think he wants the show to give you permission to do O'Reilly as a Scottish voice.
Do what I want.
Well, do you have a Bill O'Reilly story for us today?
I don't have a Bill O'Reilly story.
That was Warren Christmas.
Did I do
I
did
think
I
you started,
get kind of Irish when I did Bill O'Reilly?
I believe I accused you of doing Scottish when you thought you were doing Irish, and I may have been wrong.
Yeah. No, I remember because I said
the ethnic voices thing has just been problematic since the beginning.
I know.
We're continuing,
to say the least.
We're continuing because of comedic value, because comedy violates social norms.
Right.
And we'll get yelled at. For that, but we will also, you know, we will oppose racism and ethnic stereotyping with our last breath. So
anyway, I had already said that my grasp on Irish rather than Scottish accents is not great.
Yeah,
so
me neither.
I think the answer is no.
No, you may not. You may not do.
I'm
Russell
not giving
as loud
myself
Scottish.
Permission.
I don't know. On second thought, in retrospect, right, in the grand scheme of things, a Scottish might be, in fact, precisely what this show means. So, yeah.
Even Pirate Bill O'Reilly would be.
Arr, cut his mic.
Is it okay to be racist against pirates?
Pirates are not a race.
Oh,
pirates are like
out.
Pirates are like Muslims, man. It's not a race.
You pegged that one.
Oh.
All right. So.
Oh, that's driving me nuts.
That's your short letter, so it's your turn now. Are you ready?
I think I always heard that the standard pirate accent is actually Welsh.
Oh, but, okay.
Really? Yeah. You mean historically?
It, well,
like anybody
the
ever.
The stereotype pirate accent.
All right.
Just like the stereotype Dracula accent is supposed to be Russian, but I'm told is more Polish, apparently. Anyway, it is actually time. And I just realized I didn't text my intentions to our still relatively new producers. But hopefully me talking slowly is enough to give them time to come to grips with the segment. Internet apologists.
Well done.
I think they got it from context.
Yeah.
So
I know I was being subtle, but
we couldn't tell.
Yeah. Today's installment is from where did it go?
I can't have to tap it again.
The show's falling
apart.
No,
it's somebody you never heard of, I think. Dr. Jordan B. Peterson at jordanbpeterson.com. I don't know that he's important, but he's apparently going to have some kind of debate with Sam Harris, I guess.
All right.
Doesn't necessarily qualify anyone as important. On January 16th, I'm going to talk with Sam Harris on his podcast, Waking Up with Sam Harris. Dr. Harris is he a doctor? He's got like an undergrad degree, I thought.
I don't know.
Whatever. Is one of the so-called new atheists, of which there are four, like the other three, Christopher Hitchens, Dan Bennett.
Wait. The new atheists, of which there are four?
Yeah.
Four?
And wow. One of them is our listener.
Right. And we're the other three, so Sam Harris can't even be one.
Right.
Jordan B. Peterson.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hitchens, Dennett, and Dawkins, who, by the way, I have always wanted particularly to debate. I don't think he'll get a chance to debate Hitchens. Anyway, I am preparing my arguments carefully, although I have done so for years. Oh, this guy's going to be long-winded.
Yeah.
So he says, the central problem of human beings isn't religion, as the new atheists insist.
Mm-hmm.
It's tribalism.
Okay.
Yeah, I should point out, I looked him up. He's a psychologist.
All right.
Sam
Harris?
Tribalism. Fine.
What?
Sam Harris or this guy?
This guy.
Yeah,
this guy. We know who Sam Harris is,
don't
we?
Yes.
I think Frank knows who he is.
I just want to say, like, the first thing that struck me on reading this article is, you know, I'm so close to finding he has a good point because religion is not the central problem of human beings because there is no one central problem of human beings. People have a lot of problems, of which tribalism is one of them.
And of which religion is tribalism.
Yes. Religion is often a subcategory of tribalism.
All right.
Anyway, so, I mean, you know, he's halfway not really onto something, but
he's
but
also
not completely
off
base yet.
I hate to point this out. He's also not an apologist.
Mm-hmm. Is he not?
No. This guy is a psychologist. He is not some Christian.
You can be a religious apologist.
All right. Just because he doesn't think it's the biggest problem doesn't mean he's some jerkwad.
You haven't heard the rest of this blog post yet.
All right. Go ahead.
I did choose to stick with this one for reasons.
Okay.
We know this in part because chimps, our closest biological kin, go to war, and they are not religious, although they are tribal.
Oh, good grief. So if there are reasons for war other than religion, then religion
is off the hook.
Then religion is off the hook.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. He's an apologist.
The politics of identity, which emerge when the central purpose is criticized too destructively, inevitably produce the situation described in the story of the Tower of Babel. Everyone fragments into primitive tribes and speaks their own language. I hasten to point out that the reason people did that in the Tower of Babel story was because God made them.
Yeah.
Like, they were working together too well, and so God split them up on purpose.
Right.
And the Tower of Babel story is not a sociological commentary on an observed phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
It is a myth made up to explain an observed phenomenon.
Right.
So right now, already, religion has infected this guy, which he says is no big deal, right? Has infected this guy's
ability to reason.
Because, because he's treating the Tower of Babel story as like a point of data in his favor.
Yeah.
Okay, go on.
Anyway, I'm skimming down to get Please. To more of the good stuff.
The meat.
This eons-old work of the imagination is a dramatic presentation of an emergent idea, which is the solution to how to organize social being without falling prey to nihilistic divisiveness or deceitful totalitarian certainty.
What?
The group must unite under the banner of the individual.
He's still talking about the Tower of Babel?
No,
you skipped
ahead. What is he talking about?
Talking about more religious myths in general.
Ah, okay.
The individual is the source of the new wisdom. I think he is – sorry. It's hard to keep up the thread. And to be fair, this guy uses more academic language than our typical apologists.
Yeah.
So – the individual is the source of the new wisdom that updates the antiquated nihilistic or totalitarian detritus and glory of the past. For better or for worse, that idea reaches its apogee in Christianity.
Which I think the new thing reaches its apogee in Christianity or the old thing?
Wow. Way to obfuscate, dude. Mm.
The divine individual is masculine because the feminine is not individual. The divine feminine is instead mother and child. I don't know. Is he blaming religion for?
Who knows?
Okay, this is like reading Time Cube. Come on.
I mean, to be fair, I'm skimming.
Do you know, Russell, whether this discussion has happened yet?
No, it is happening on January 16th.
Okay.
You know, I
and this guy has a YouTube channel if you want to go more into it.
No, I just want to hear Sam Harris rip him a new one.
Mm.
And I have my issues with Sam Harris, right? At every opportunity we'll talk about how I think he's full of shit on several issues, but hey, that's cuz he's a human being. I'm sure I'm full of shit on several things too.
All right.
But I think I do want to watch this one.
Okay. It does gradually seem to be getting worse.
That's
a close reading of 20th century history indicates, as nothing else can, the horrors that accompany loss of faith in the idea of the individual.
Oh, there he goes.
Only the individual, after all, who suffers. The group does not suffer, only those who compose it.
So he's going for collectivism is bad, which means communism is bad, and somehow he has gotten it into his head that Christianity is about individuals and individual rights and not about a fucking collective. If a church full of Christians isn't a fucking collective, I don't know what is. If a church in Rome is not a, you know, that manipulates everything like a spider at the center of their organization isn't a collective, I don't know what the hell is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Effective birth control has emerged as one of the consequences of our powerful technological materialism. This has been accompanied by the rise of states sufficiently civilized so that women who inhabit them can walk the streets unaccompanied in safety. That sounds like he's saying it's a good thing.
I hope.
We do not yet know how to balance the opportunities thus provided for expanded female individuality with the eternal necessity for a woman to serve as the mother of the divine individual.
What?
Okay, he's going into crazy.
He goes
town.
Into the.
Finally.
He just spirals into nonsense at the ends of his paragraphs or something. He just.
Dividing our civilization into polarized ideological camps of female group identity and male group identity is certainly not the answer. We have to be honest, male and female alike.
So he's an anti-feminist as well.
About what we really want as individuals and talk it out. We know beyond dispute that societies who emancipate their women are much more productive and peaceful, and that the relationship is causal. Thus, it's not a matter of if, but how.
Yeah, but as far as he's concerned, for gosh sake, let's emancipate them and then let's do that magically without talking about it, because if you talk about it, then you've divided into camps. And let's do that magically, even though their babies are gods that need to be cared for by their mommies, and... A good grief! What is wrong with this guy? Well, I am gonna try to catch this on Sam Harris's show.
Yeah,
this sounds like a hoot.
I'm not sure if we're doing him justice or not, because he seems to be, because he keeps swinging back and forth between saying semi-reasonable stuff
and then
diving
see,
into
the thing
weirdness.
Is, the thing is, everybody sometimes says semi-reasonable stuff.
Yeah, but our typical apologists.
We judge people, though, on the frequency with which they spin off into crazy insanity. And this guy's doing it at the end of every other sentence.
Mm-hmm. We need to wake up, individual man and woman alike, and we need to do it now. Each of us must take the world on our shoulders, insofar as we are capable of that, and adopt individual responsibility for the horrors and suffering its existence entails. In that, we will find the meaning, capital M, without which life, capital L, is merely the suffering that breeds first resentment and then the desire for vengeance and destruction.
Oh, good grief, dude. Get over yourself. Somewhere in there, there's like, you know, regular old garden variety, let's be decent people. But it's not necessary.
Which is a good thing to promote.
It's not necessary to dress that up with all these allusions to, you know, Bible stories and divine this and divine that. I mean, all that does is you divide people into two camps. The people who believe that the supernatural context you've layered on top of everything, the sensible people, and the people who believe that stuff. I got confused in the middle of my sentence. One camp is the people who believe that stuff, and the other camp is the people who reject it.
Yeah,
because and look where we are now in the United States.
Yeah. Well, it's a befuddling installment.
Yes, that was bizarre.
That was
I thought
terrible.
It would be better. And I blame at NRR Prophet who submitted it.
Well, it's a good thing though that you in fact vetted that completely. So,
hey, are you throwing shade right now?
Did you catch Ken Ham's argument with the Washington Post?
I did not.
Ken Ham had an argument with the Washington Post?
Yeah.
Did you bring us some news, Dennis?
Yeah, oddly enough. Creationist Ken Ham is very angry at the Washington Post, incorrectly reporting that he believes dinosaurs were wiped out by the biblical flood described in the story of Noah. The reality, says Ham, is that Noah brought dinosaurs on board with him.
Jeez. So get it straight,
that's
you guys.
Their argument. Yes.
What is the date article? Could you
the date ago?
That article is apparently 1st of January 2017.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh yeah.
So, 1st of January 2017, people are arguing about whether dinosaurs were on the Ark.
It sounds a little bit familiar, but then it's Ken Ham.
Yeah.
He's a one note guy. I guess I can do one more letter, maybe.
Were you done with that? Was there more funny stuff from Ken Ham?
No, that's it.
All right.
That's the essence of the story.
Okay. Kit from Los Angeles writes, during the discussion of Bill O'Reilly's declaration of victory in the war on Christmas, Jeff said that it would be as if O'Reilly had said that we were attacking Canada, then using Canada's continued existence as proof of the failure of the war on Canada. However, a better analogy by reversing the parties, that it was Canada who was attacking the U.S. instead, with the continuing existence of the United States being evidence of our victory in the face of violent Canuckistani aggression.
Okay, now I think we're just nitpicking.
Kit,
can only take a metaphor so far.
He's not wrong. It would be a slight improvement to the metaphor, mm-hmm. which I made up on the fly while we were talking. Right, it would be a slight improvement and slightly better fit the situation being analogized if we did that. But
thank you for workshopping that with us.
Okay, Kit. He goes on, or she. My own war story from my retail days. I once wished a woman happy holidays as she left the store. And she turned around and demanded, why do you hate Jesus? Yes. The irony being, I was still a Christian at the time. Yeah, that is weird that, and maybe worth a little bit of discussion, that the knee-jerk reaction to things like that. And just extend that, not just to saying happy holidays, right. but like, you know, in under religious regimes where you're supposed to dress a certain way or wear not have your face covered or your head covered or is right. And you don't do it. The immediate reaction is that you're hostile against the religion and that you're out to get them somehow, right?
Right.
That you're an enemy, when it would sure help, I think, a lot of believers to do a moment and say, well, yeah, that's a thing that somebody who more or less agrees with me on everything else could be doing, right? Without being my enemy.
Yeah, yeah.
And in that spirit, I will say, HJ, if you want to believe that atheism has to be this specific thing that you very carefully laid out with all of your comments, sure, fine, go ahead. I'm glad you're an atheist, and you may not think I am after I have disagreed with you, but whether you like it or not, we're on the same side.
Jeff is an atheist. I know this may come as a shock.
All right. Well, that was not nearly enough letter to get us through that. Is there any more news? We could do one more quick one.
Let's see.
What was that? Do
I didn't really want to do it that much.
All right. And I think we'll talk about that.
I can. Yeah, sure.
All right.
Pope warns media over sin of spreading fake news and smearing politicians.
Mm-hmm.
Media. This is in the Huffington Post, by the way, which has a history of sucking up to the Pope. Media that focuses on scandals and spreads fake news to smear politicians risk becoming like people who have a morbid fascination with excrement, Pope Francis said an interview published on
Okay.
Wow. I bet that's the.
So here's the problem right off the bat.
Actually, this is coming from Reuters, not I mean, Huffington is just posting.
Okay, but the place this goes off the rails in the very first sentence is he lumps scandals and fake news same category.
Oh.
See what he's done there?
Uh-huh.
Because fake news is, I think we are all in agreement, fake news is bad and we're against it, right?
And there are fake scandals.
And there are fake scandals. But there are also real scandals, some of which are ridiculous. Like,
sure.
Who cares if somebody had an affair? Okay? I don't. That's between them and their spouse. But other scandals are actual things.
Yes. Right?
Actual terrible things. Actual little boys are being raped by actual priests. For example.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Just to pick a random example that doesn't necessarily...
Just because something is a scandal does not mean that it is bad to cover it. Some scandals are really horrible things that need to be exposed. And
need
the
to
perpetrators,
shine a light on them.
Yes, a light shined on the perpetrator, it stops.
Yeah.
So there you go. That I think is the core dishonesty of this entire
serving at all.
I think this next paragraph is hilarious, not about the Pope, but because of how it reflects on what's going through the writer's head.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh boy.
Using precise psychological terms, he said scandal-mongering media risked falling prey to coprophilia.
Which is pretty insane.
Or, that is a precise psychological term.
It
that
is.
That is actually a word for a thing. That's like saying,
I'm just saying that's needlessly sucking up and adding stuff that's not really there.
Yes, giving him credit for something that in which he does not have a degree, I assume.
And then it goes on to explain, like, or
speaking in complete sentences.
Or arousal from excrement. And consumers of these media risked.
I don't want to read this.
They risked, here comes another one, coprophagia, or eating excrement.
Wow.
So the Pope warned people not to eat shit is, think, what happened there.
The author was trying to raise the clicks on that.
Here's your direct quote. Wow. I think the media have to be very clear, very transparent, and not fall into, no offense intended, the sickness of coprophilia that is always wanting to cover scandals, covering nasty things, even if they are true, he said.
Even if they're true. So we're not as, so if you're going to do something bad,
he's blatantly saying
what the Pope is telling
the
you.
The other way.
What the Pope is telling you is that if you're going to do something bad, make sure it's like horrific, scandalous, so that following the Pope's advice, nobody will look at it and you'll be able to get away with what you're doing.
Jeez.
I myself, as you all know, I do not eat the excrement. I eat only my boogers.
I've heard that.
But there was video, man. All right.
All right. Are we about done?
I'm checking. Yeah. Still have a couple of minutes.
That's close enough.
When you eat the host, you don't get to decide what part of Jesus it becomes, right?
It's flesh. There's a lot of – wait a minute. The host, yeah, the host is the bread. That's the flesh. Yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Get some excrement.
When you drink the wine,
there.
It's blood. It's very specifically blood.
Very
they don't say whether
blood.
What
right.
blood type
right.
it is.
No.
And
no.
they don't say whether it's the blood coming out from the heart that's oxygen, or the blood coming back.
Right.
They don't get into that level of detail, which I've always thought was a bit of an oversight. They could stamp on the wafers, like which body part.
The main problem.
You know how with cows,
venous,
right? They
arterial,
have charts,
you know.
And the charts divide the cow up into different.
Yeah.
So they could totally. That's. I'm going to do a little art project.
The main problem with transubstantiation is that they're not specific enough about using biological terms.
Right, right.
That's the only thing wrong with it.
I'm going to make a little like cuts of meat chart of Jesus.
Mine turned into his left earlobe.
So When you get the wafer, you can just inquire which cut of meat it is. Some are better than others, as we all know.
And for people who are listening to the podcast later, we had to start a little late due to some car troubles from some people. And it's now much later than usual, but they also stuck it out for you.
You know, has it ever occurred to you that, you know, they have Jesus's, actually they say, don't say Jesus's flesh, they say body, right? Uh-huh. As if blood wasn't part of the body, but, those wafers could include bone, hair, fingernails.
Right.
Right.
And feces.
But are feces really part of the body? It's a good question. At what point the food Jesus digested became part of his physical body?
Yeah, yeah.
But we will have to go over that on another day.
On another day.
Take us out, Dennis. Bye, everyone. Goodbye, Frank. Thanks for listening.
Well, Frank, that was our show. You are Frank, right? No shit. Well, look, if you see Frank, please tell him we'll be back in 2 weeks on the 18th of January, okay? Could you please do that? Thanks. Oh, and tell him there'll be I Am the Satellite by Brian Stieksma. Hey there, brother, don't you know the guy upstairs left us years ago? So there ain't no fake except the one you make. And there ain't no hell except the shit you take every day. So don't tell me life doesn't hurt and that you don't need the people, 'cause you've got your chance, you got